Hospitalitychain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, Hospitalitychain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Fell Into Food podcast. I am your host, Chef Jeff Fell, and today with me is Travis Peterson. He goes by the Nomad Cook, but after reviewing everything that you've done, I think of you as a chef, honestly. Just given your body of work, the things that you've done, do you think that's a fair assessment at this stage of your career and everything that you've done?
Absolutely. I mean, the reason the brand was called the Nomad Cook and not the Nomad Chef was I got my start 10 years ago. I got onto MasterChef, the TV show. When I came off the show, I was very quickly told, you are not a chef. and I respected that. I looked up to everything. I mean, I was 31 starting a culinary career. It was going to be called the Nomad Cook. It was going to be called the Nomad Chef. I switched to the Nomad Cook. And I mean, there was definitely some imposter syndrome in those first couple years. But I mean, over 1,200 pop-up dinners, thousands of menus created. I definitely would call myself a chef now. And I think I've earned that title. And, I don't require people to call me chef and stuff like that. I'm a chef. The Nomad Cook brand is really for anybody. It doesn't have to be just for chefs. We really wanted to promote culinary cannabis in a safe aspect. There's people at home making gummies and wanting to learn to do it safely and not have a brownie situation that makes them never want to touch it again. And we also want to inspire upcoming cooks and chefs that want to take this on. So that's a little summary of the brand name and that.
Yeah, it's super cool. I think it's really humbling that you were able to, like, after you received the feedback, you're like, you know what, I'm going to keep it this name. And then you let what I believe the title to develop to then be earned, not just, you went to school like a lot of people.
Yeah.
But the reason when you reached out, what was so interesting is that I'm sure you know Chris Sage. You have to know him.
Yeah.
So I know him as well and did a dinner with him. I've had firsthand experience of like doing one of these type dinners that you've done. And when you did that, I was like, ooh, this is going to be awesome to talk more in depth.
He is the whole reason we got into cannabis.
Really?
I've actually never met him or spoke to him. But in 2018, so I'm from Canada, Vancouver. That's where I grew up. Lived all over the west coast of Canada, up in the Pacific Northwest. Canada federally legalized cannabis in 2018. And it was March 2018. I remember exactly where I was. I was standing at a bus stop on Granville Street. And on the front page of the local North Shore newspaper was Chef Chris promoting his cannabis dinners coming to Canada in Toronto and Vancouver. And my original thought was, why isn't a Canadian doing this first in Canada? And so he sold his dinners out in 2 days. 200 tickets. Yeah. So I said, okay, I'm going to do a cannabis pop-up. And I announced I'm going to do a cannabis pop-up dinner over 420, which was a weekend. I turned my house into a little pop-up restaurant and we had 164 people come through that weekend.
Wow.
I was only going to do it the one time. I thought this was really a fad that was coming with legalization. CTV, which is like Canadian CBS, heard what I was doing. They reached out and were like, would you do a story about this illegal thing you're doing out of your house? And I agreed to do it. They aired it just at the local news at 5, and then they used it to lead the national news at 5:30, and everything just blew up, and not blew up in a bad way, but took off. And for the next 10 years, this is all that I've done and focused on. I've got so much gratitude for Chef. He's inspired a whole generation to take a chance. And it's been a wild ride.
You know what? I'm going to connect you two after I get off here. I'll shoot him a note and say, you've got to. I can't believe that you two have never connected in real life, given what you do, given what he does. It's just, it's a pretty cool thing of what you guys do. Before we get into it, because again, my audience is a little different. You know, a lot of the podcasts and things that you've done, it's a lot of chefy chefs, and they understand what pop-ups are and what, you know, even the cannabis cooking thing and how it's really matured over the past 10 years. They understand that. My audience, maybe not so much. So we'll touch a little bit into that. But before we do, how did you even, you know, your fell into food moment, right? You weren't in the food industry, but what prepared you to even, you saw it, you're like, I want to do this. But what even prepared you to do this?
So when I was 15, I moved out on my own, just at the end of grade 10. And very quickly, you know, I couldn't afford to go out to restaurants and wasn't going to live off of fast food. So I had to learn to cook for myself. And, you know, I think I had 4 or 5 dishes in my repertoire that I would make. That led to, as I got older, you know, cooking for someone else, you know, maybe on a date or something, and seeing it, it gave me a little, made me look a little more responsible and mature. That grew to taking friends away on summer vacations and loving to cooking for groups, and then just falling in love with the dinner table. I think there's something very beautiful when we all sit around the table, how we come together. It doesn't matter what culture you're coming from. We all share that experience. So I always really valued and appreciated that. I loved watching the reality cooking shows. And I think I was kind of, it was a Friday afternoon at 4 o'clock when I found the application for MasterChef. It was, I think I was half serious when I filled it out. I was like, it would be cool, but it's not going to happen. And, you know, Monday morning, I get the call from MasterChef and we'd like you to come audition. And it just started rolling.
Dude, that's super cool how you can go from that to, again, all it takes is a couple of right things and you created your own luck.
Well, the real right thing is I got eliminated on the second episode. So I had 3 minutes of airtime. I did not season my pico de gallo. I bombed on tacos. And, I had this 14-year-long career in oil and gas. I was a sales director for an oil company. I had everything society said you wanted, but there was a giant hole inside of me. And forever, I tried to find a way to fulfill it. After getting eliminated from MasterChef 10 days after returning with a recession in oil and gas, I was laid off. And they offered me a 1-year severance package not to go to our competitors. Without that lining up, there was no way at 31 I was going to try and become a chef. I just thought you have to start in the dish pit and work your way up. So the stars really aligned. I knew I was going to have a year to have some fun and had to take some steps back in life to start over. And all of a sudden that hole that I had tried everything to fill was overflowing with love and happiness. And it gave me a new spark to life. And those first 2 years just grinded as hard as I could, finding private dinners, cooking lessons, anything in culinary that would prevent me from having to go back into sales. And I think, you know, my years of experience with sales gave me the ability to sell pop-up dinners in cities that I had never been to. So it started in, you know, when the first, I did 3 pop-up dinners before I moved into the cannabis space. There was a restaurant in Edmonton, Alberta called Northern Chicken. They were a fried chicken sandwich shop. They were closed on Wednesdays. I just asked, could I have your space on Wednesday to do a dinner? And Chef Matt said yes. And that's where I gained the confidence of doing these pop-up dinners. So.
Yeah, it's just the repetition of doing. I was having this conversation literally the other day. We were talking about, you know, it's one thing to watch and view and you could do it 1,000 times. I had a chef in culinary school tell me, we were doing omelets and, you know, I was in my mid-20s, so I felt odd already going. There was a bunch of 18-year-olds there. And omelets are intimidating when it's like you need a French omelet, no color, the whole 9 yards. And he goes, you can stand here and watch me make 100 omelets. It's not going to make you any better doing it. He goes, pick up the spatula, put the damn eggs in the pan and just do it. And just by doing it over and over and over and failing time after time.
It's that 10,000 hours they say you need to get, right? I say it all the time when people reach out to me. It's like, you know, how do I get started? I'm like, just get started. Don't be afraid to fail. By failing is only going to make you stronger. This is how you learn from stuff. You have to make mistakes to know not to do that, right? So I always say to people, like, put yourself out there.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about the ACF certification. I didn't even know this was a thing. So I was very curious when I had read about it, that there's an actual certification that you can get through the American Culinary Federation on cannabis. Like, how did that come about? What is that course? What do you do? What does that all entail?
Yeah. So, you know, when the pandemic hit and shut everything down, that's when I moved from Canada to the U.S. My wife was from Arizona. You know, the first year and a half, all of a sudden there was a lot of spare time when I developed a cookbook. It's called Introduction to Culinary Cannabis. There's about 80 pages of theory, 44 recipes that aren't cookies, brownies, gummies. The book was extremely well received, a ton of feedback coming from chefs. Like, I wish there was a course to teach me. So 2024, I start developing the online course using the Teachable platform. When I finished it, I just picked up the phone and I called the ACF and I said, hey, I've got this online course. Are you guys interested? Luckily for me, they had just hired a brand new director and one of his top three priorities was to develop a course for culinary cannabis. And I was providing a full turnkey solution. So, you know, it was a perfect fit. The biggest struggle in cannabis is you cannot market like traditional brands or companies. So it's very hard to get the word out there to people that, you know, this class is available. So it's been part of my transition here over the last 2 years. You know, if at the height of touring was doing 20 days a month, 10 to 12 cities across the country. That was a well-oiled machine, but it took 6 months to plan those dinners ahead of time. And I just had to last summer say the touring's got to stop. We're going to focus on education and have slowly kind of been moving in that direction.
But what does it mean for, like, to you that there's a real credential pathway in this space, like for people looking to get into it?
I've kind of said all along, like, my original hesitation was this was a fad. There are people that cook with cannabis out there that are like, don't call me a cannabis chef. I'm a chef that cooks with cannabis. I really once started getting the recognition and said, no, I'm a cannabis chef. I've hosted in 117 U.S. cities, 37 states since moving down here. I've been to the South. I've been to Arkansas. I've been to Atlanta. I've been to Kansas City. I've been everywhere in this country. And there is something so beautiful with this cuisine. We have strangers buying tickets, coming in. They don't know who they're sitting at the table with. This country is a little divided at the moment. So you would think, maybe not a good idea. But we have never had one problem. We've never had one disagreement, one argument, anything other than love around the table. People, oh, you like cannabis too? It opens up conversation. And that really takes me back to my point of there's something beautiful about the dinner table. So me watching how this was being received, I just thought I've got a real opportunity. I'm being called a pioneer here. So let's really lay this road down. Because I got my start so much later in life, you know, I didn't have the years to stage and the years to spend learning. My skills, my abilities are somewhat limited. I'm proud of the work I put out, but I always thought, man, what's going to happen when someone who's 18, spent the year in the dish, getting going, starts to take everything I've learned and then runs with it? I really wanted to kind of be remembered as the person who opened the door for the next generation to really get this into the mainstream. So to have someone like the American Culinary Federation say, yes, this is important. Yes, education needs to be taught on this subject, and there should be a certificate that goes along with it. It really gives a stamp of approval that this is a cuisine that's here to stay and not a fad or some food trend or anything along those lines.
But it's not just about the use of cannabis. And I say that in the way of, like, I heard you talk about, what's that T word?
Terpenes.
Terpenes.
Yes.
And when you explain that, and I want you to explain it, of how it's different flavor develops and smells, and that's what food is. So it's not just about, maybe two part. Talk about that a little bit, and then talk about what these dinners actually are. Because I think when people hear it, the first thing they think is, oh, it's just a bunch of people at a dinner getting high and stoned out of their mind, and the normal stigma of behind cannabis. So let's talk about those first, and then jump into the other piece.
So it's a great point, and one of the things that I always pushed back against was stoner culture. Listen, I like to sit on the couch and hit the bong, and I like Bob Marley, and I love high brownies, but, you know, we've had over 30,000 people sit at our dinner table, and over 1,000 of them have been first-time cannabis users. Last year, when I was in London with the Soho House, out of 92 people, 28 were first-time cannabis users. 20 of those 28 were over the age of 60. So this being able to bring in people that have a perception already that it's stoner culture, there's going to be people smoking joints and tie-dye and dreadlocks, and they come in and, you know, from how we set the table to the table decor, to the music. I play Motown. Otis Redding radio is always on at my dinners, and I hear it every single dinner. I love the playlist. I love the music. You know, these, to me, those are dinner classics. And, you know, I think we just set the scene. You know, we have rules. When people come in, we dose everyone individually based on your own tolerance level. So, you know, whether you're a first timer or you're using cannabis every single day, the goal is to make sure everyone leaves with the same experience. So the three rules that I've implemented in the dinners, the first one, no tolerance for, no peer pressure. If I catch anyone peer pressuring another guest into a dose they're not comfortable with, I won't serve them cannabis. You know, it's, I want those guests who are nervous to come in and know I've got their back. I want them to come back, and I'm not going to let someone else push them into something they're not comfortable with, because one bad experience at the beginning, you're never going to touch this again. You know, the college brownie story is classic. We made brownies in college. We tripped balls for days. I've never touched it again. I've heard that so many times. So creating a safe environment that people feel comfortable coming in, those guests that are first timers or that have a really low tolerance, if they have a good experience, their word of mouth is more valuable than any ad I can run. That's what brought me back to Little Rock, Arkansas for 3 times in a 10-week period, where we were seeing 80% of the guests first-timers. You know, really creating that sort of safe space. Now, we do events where we allow consumption. You know, we do like a wake and bake brunch. If we're doing events out in California, you kind of play to the market of what you allow and what you can. But I always say to people, like, this is about the food and the dining experience. So don't come here thinking we're just blazing joints and smoking the room out. You can hire me for a private dinner. You make the rules. We do that. But when it's for the public, it's about the food, and it's about creating really a safe space to come in and know that the chef's got your back.
And then the tenements, is that what it was?
Terpenes, yes.
Terpenes.
So terpenes, extremely, extremely important. You know, the industry uses the terms sativa, indica, hybrid. Those terms have been hijacked. They do not represent what we're being sold to the mass. They refer to the growth pattern of the plant. Sativas grow in a warmer climate. That's why the flower and buds are longer. They're stringier. The indica plants grow in a colder climate. That's why the flowers are tighter and firmer. So why is sativa supposed to be daytime, energetic, get stuff done, indica, in the couch, Cheetos, Netflix and chill? It's the terpene profiles. Terpenes are also identically found in plants, fruits, and herbs. They're not just the flavor and aroma, but they're responsible for the effects that we feel when we use cannabis. So everyone has an endocannabinoid system. We have, we naturally produce cannabinoids in our body already. And we have these receptors. They're called a CB1 receptor and a CB2 receptor. And when we consume cannabis and we're smoking a joint or we're eating it, the cannabinoids and the terpenes will bind together and join with those receptors. And that's what gives us the munchies. That's what gives us the sedative effects, the energy, the creativity. So, you know, if you were to eat a mango 30 minutes before smoking your first joint, that mango will increase the effects of the cannabinoids. You'll feel the effects a little stronger. So when I'm creating my menu, I'm usually going to work with two or three different strains. I'm going to look at what are those terpene profiles in those strains and how can I pair them with the plants, fruits, and ingredients in the recipes I'm creating. I don't want to start with sedative terpenes that are going to couch lock everyone. We want to use energy and excitement. Everyone's coming in excited. So let's pick that up. That's good. Everyone's going to be talking and it's going to be loud. And then all of a sudden it just gets quiet. You'll have a course that goes out. The room gets quiet. You know, people are in it. So, you know, that is the part that I always found the culinary world would really grasp onto was these terpenes, because I had a chance to eat at Alinea in Chicago, one of the top restaurants, not just in America, but around the world, 3 Michelin stars. Chef Grant was using terpenes in a dish. Now, terpenes by themselves are nothing more than flavor and aroma. They're regulated or unregulated around the whole world. You can buy terpenes anywhere. They won't do anything to you consuming them by themselves. It's when they are combined with a cannabinoid that we get what we call an entourage effect. So I always thought terpenes were going to be really exciting for the culinary world to grasp on. Now, another thing to realize is that we all react differently to terpenes. So that's why, you know, for me, my favorite strain is Super Romulan Haze. If I'm consuming that, I'm not burning out. I'm not eating too much. I'm happy. It's great for me. Someone else might try that strain and be like, it's all right. And that's just because different terpene blends have different effects on different people. So as corny as it sounds, the way you find out where your terpene profile is you journal. You know, might take you 8 to 10 weeks, but every time you smoke cannabis, what's the strain name? Google quickly, what are the terpene profiles? Depending what state you live in, some states regulate that the cannabis companies actually put the terpene profiles on the canisters. So if we look at Maryland, I think Maryland's a great example of a state that is labeling those terpene profiles. California's one. You know, California's a real developed cannabis market, so the people are educated on terpenes. These words are scientific. They're intimidating. So I can understand why the original plan was sativa indica, but it's really the terpenes you should start to learn about. Shopping on THC percentage is just a way to spend more money. 33% versus 24% is not going to be a big difference when you're consuming it, you're smoking a joint. You should really be asking, what is the terpene percentage? Because the more terpenes means you've got more trichomes on the flower. It's just that flower is more fresh. It has had the love and care put into it through its growth. So, you know, terpene percentage, if you can get over 2.5% terpenes up to 4%, that's what you want to be consuming.
Nice. So when I was helping Chris at his dinner, the way that he infused, because again, people I think are still like, okay, well, how the hell are you infusing it? Because I think the still perception is they're just taking weed and they're just like sprinkling it on food is at least is what I noticed. Because I was in more of the kitchen. I was helping kind of run around. He was obviously out front doing the guest speeches and all that kind of stuff. But I noticed when they were plating is they were just dropping and they had labels on every plate of the microdose of how much was going on there. Is that typically how you were doing it? Or are there other ways that you're infusing it into the food?
When I first started, yes. So again, I don't fully know exactly what Chef Chris is doing, but from the sounds of it, I would assume what he's using are isolates. So you can isolate a cannabinoid, THC or CBD, and infuse it into like an MCT oil. That'll be flavorless. And then you can eye drop precisely how many milligrams you want to be adding on. I think it's a great way to start and be confident with how much you're adding, but anyone with a low tolerance to cannabis, pure THC can bring on anxiety and paranoia. The plant actually works better together than it does by its separate parts. So I would really only be including isolates if I have guests with extremely high tolerances. the way I would go about creating my extractions full spectrum is, an example, I do a course, it's called a Big Mac Egg Roll. We call it our pre-roll. It's usually our first bite we send out. You know, ground beef, American cheddar, onions, pickles, and an egg roll deep fried on top of a little bit of lettuce. And then we make Big Mac sauce and we infuse that. So the way I would go about it, again, we're dosing each guest on their own tolerance level. So anywhere from 1 milligram up to 100 milligrams you can consume for the full dinner. That means every course will have one infused component. So for our first course, the pre-roll, our infused Big Mac egg, our Big Mac sauce, I'm going to make that sauce in a large batch and then divide it up into four, put it into, have it go into four separate squeeze bottles. One of those squeeze bottles are going to have no cannabis in it. So it's going to be a zero. Then I'm going to make a batch with a low amount that maybe is like 1 milligram per tablespoon, 2 milligrams per tablespoon. Then on that third bottle is going to be about a medium dose. So you're getting about 5 milligrams. And then that fourth bottle is 10. So I do that for every course. That gives me the ability to keep plate consistency, but to make sure that you're getting a dose that was built for your tolerance. So again, kind of going back to that 10,000 hours thing, you know, and this is kind of what we teach through the ACF course is, you know, you have to come up with a service plan before your guests come in, and you have to take your front of house through that plan on how this is going to be dosed. I need to know, because I don't take my guests' tolerance level until they sit down. I personally go out myself and take it, not the server. I want them to know, okay, good. The person who's adding the cannabis to the food is the one who came and asked me. You know, I do level one is 5 milligrams, level two is 10, three is 25, four is 50, and five is 100. So I need to know long before my guests ever show up, how am I going to dose my level fives, right? I'm not just going to go 20, 20, 20, 20, 20. I actually want to kind of have peaks and valleys so that you feel a little spike and then it comes down, you feel a spike and it comes down. So I got to have a plan ahead of time. Things that you can do, get some colored elastic bands, put them around your squeeze bottles so you know what color is what dosing level, and you know, come up with that plan ahead of time. My goal is always a 90-minute service. So I can't be stopping and starting and looking and grabbing a calculator. I have to know how I'm going to get these correct dosages on the plate. I then need to make sure I walk through with the front of house staff who's bringing the plates out that they are 100% confident on table number, seat number, because I'm going off a little chart in the kitchen and I'm going to pass the plate out, table one, seat one, table one, seat two, and have them go out and put those plates down. You know, to the guests sitting at the table, everything looks the same. In the back end, though, there's been a lot of precision to go in to make sure that the correct dose is getting sent out.
Yeah, a lot of prep work that goes yep. into these events.
This gives anxiety to some chefs sometimes, but I say you have to consider that every single one of your guests has an allergy.
Pretty much, yeah, totally. Sure. So I was on Instagram, you know, checking out the page. You know, you announced the pop-ups are the wrapping up in September. It was a pretty emotional post.
Yeah,
what went into the decision, and why is now the right time?
Well, I'm coming up on full 10 years from that original MasterChef competition. You know, I never really got started on this to be a traveling chef. That just kind of developed because people started asking me, would you come to our city and do this? Once the news piece came out, that first dinner, it was so exciting just to be in Canada before I got to the U.S., getting to go to Toronto, Montreal, Ottawa. Like, I was touring, you know, like, who had ever heard of that? It was so cool. I was single. You know, I was full of ambition and just wanted to go out there and get it. 2019, I do my very first solo pop-up in San Francisco. I sell it out. I decide I'm going to come in a couple days early and enjoy some food in the city. I end up meeting my wife. And, you know, that's what, when the pandemic came, it gave us the opportunity to move in the U.S. All of a sudden, I'm cooking in New York and Chicago and San Francisco. I connect with the Soho House. Now they're sending me to Paris and London. And it was surreal and wild. But 20 days a month on the road, I don't think what people recognize is we're traveling with 500 pounds of gear. I've got a sous chef with me. I've got three coolers. I've got luggage. You know, this is still in a gray space, so I cannot promote publicly. Everything's got to be done through Instagram. You know, we just finally had a scheduling change of cannabis from schedule one to schedule three, but, you know, bank accounts getting shut down, Airbnb accounts getting shut down. It just, there were a ton of obstacles. And little by little, I think the love for doing the pop-ups started to go away. And I was recognizing it. It was not awesome. I'm going to New York tomorrow. It was, fuck, I got to go to New York tomorrow. You know, recognizing that I had a platform now to start educating is where I wanted to really move to. You know, it's, I remember when I was a bartender and I left to go into get into oil and gas, the hardest thing was, it was the golden handcuffs. You left every night with tips, right? That's the thing. The touring aspect can be very profitable, but once you've been to a city five or six times, it's not like you're going out to enjoy the city. It's prep work. It's setup. It's, there's a lot there. So, you know, we moved to Miami last September. I've just been doing dinners here once a month with the odd trip to a city here and there. And, I knew it was time, and that's why I popped the phone up that day. I had a good talk with my dad before doing it. That was the stamp to do it. And I knew that if I didn't publicly say that I'm wrapping this up, I might keep going. And without that same love behind it, the guests aren't getting the full experience. You know, as much as the dinner is about the food, a lot of people are coming because they want to meet me. It's not just the cooking. They're being entertained. You're touching tables. You're talking with guests. And, you know, we once did 9 dinners and 13 nights over 8 cities in 2 countries. We started in Richmond, Virginia. The next night we did Baltimore. The next night we did Manhattan. The next night we did New Jersey. The next morning I left my sous chef in Boston. I flew to London. I did a dinner in London. 2 days later, I flew back to Boston. My sous chef had everything set up and we did another 4 straight nights. Now, I was extremely proud because we nailed that tour. We had everything was prepped, ready to go and that. But, I used to think, why aren't chefs touring like musicians and comedians? And because it's hard. It is very hard and taxing. And it felt like now was the time. I feel like the goal was to open the door for the next generation. I have a ton of experience and knowledge to share. And that's really where I've been shifting my Instagram, where in the past it's been all about the events. And now it's sharing what I've learned, what's worked. Also sharing the mistakes I've made, things that haven't worked. Again, you're only going to learn from failing. But if I can help give some advice or encourage people to take that step, then I would love to do that. So, you know, our last public pop-up dinner is going to be September 5th here in Miami. And after that, Nomad Cook will be solely educational.
So when you look back at all of it, 1,200 events, all the cities, all those people, what are you most proud of?
I think my proudest accomplishment of everything was working with the Soho House. For 3 straight years, 2023, 2024, 2005, got to go over to Europe. In the first year, they gave us Amsterdam, Brighton, London, Paris. Paris was going to be the last dinner. It was supposed to be 100 people, which would have been the biggest pop-up I've ever done. I was nervous. I mean, Paris is the mecca for food, right? An hour before we were set to start, after prepping for 100 people, I found out it was a restaurant takeover. It wasn't a pop-up. I never worked the line, let alone run an expo. I was extremely scared when I found out the imposter syndrome all came back. I remember going to the washroom and looking in the mirror and being like, well, you're in it now. Like, let's go. And we banged out 103 covers in 3 hours, dosing up to 10 milligrams, having tickets coming out, telling us what's up. And it was the Paris is House most successful takeover. The feedback was great. So I'm extremely proud of that moment. But I'm really just proud of everything. There was no path. No one had ever really done this. I mean, Chef Chris had really kind of set the bar as the guy. And, you know, I just didn't know where I was going with it. I put my head down and just went. And I'm in a very reflective state right now. I'm looking back at all the people that helped, that I got to work with, all the places I've been, the companies I've worked with. You know, I'm extremely proud that we just kept going and it kept growing and growing, and that I feel I'm walking away at the right time.
What are some of the most memorable moments through all of it? I mean, we just talked about overseas, but maybe some of those moments that aren't the big glam and you push through, but it just sticks in your head every time.
Well, I mean, the ACF certification, getting that out there, I think gives more credibility to this whole movement than anything else. But we've done pop-ups. We did a pop-up in northern Alberta in the middle of the wilderness where we had all of our guests meet in the city, put them on a bus, and we bussed them out, and we built a pop-up there. In Seattle back in 2023, I rented a car passenger ferry.
So through all of it, what are some of the most memorable moments? I mean, yes, you've got the big stuff that happened, but the things that kind of like live deep inside the mind, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm never going to forget this or that moment.
Yeah. I think, you know, clearly getting the certification in with the ACF, you know, my goal to really open the doors for the next generation of chefs was extremely important to me, and to have the credibility of the ACF putting a stamp of approval on this. It's only a matter of time before I think some young chef is really gonna cement himself as the cannabis chef out there and really do things that are gonna be wild. So extremely proud of that. And then just these pop-up dinners that we've hosted, you know, in the middle of the wilderness in Canada, where we bust our guests in from the city along a river that had, you could hear wolves in the background. And you know, we rented a ferry in Lake Union in Seattle during the middle of summer, a car passenger ferry. We built our kitchen on the end of it. We had a 100-person long table down the center. And for 3 hours, we circled around in the lake. I also got to work with so many talented, incredible chefs who I had no business being next to them. In my own mind, you know, these people from Top Chef, people from Master Chef, chefs who weren't reality star chefs. They were just badass fucking chefs. Sorry for swearing. But you know, I cherish that I had the opportunity to stand alongside them, because, you know, that imposter syndrome, I don't think it ever fully goes away. And I also think if you don't feel that, then you might have a bit of an ego check you need to have. I think it's a natural feeling to have, and it's actually a good feeling to have. So I'm really proud of everything that we did, all the places that we went, the chefs I got to work with, and then the chefs that were under me, the chefs I got to train along the way. You know, the young chef, his name is Avery. Chef Avery was my sous chef for 2 years. I hired him when he was 19 years old. He never missed a day in 2 years. Never. And he is someone, it doesn't matter at any point in life, I will always be there for him, because he always showed up for me. Now, he wasn't the cleanest chef. He's moved on to somewhere new. I heard his cleanliness getting a little bit better. He's actually coming to help me next week in Seattle, so I'm excited for that. But there are some people that really stepped up for me, And I'm eternally grateful for them because I couldn't get here without the help of everyone else.
Yeah, you said the imposter syndrome, and I think that's very true that even every podcast I record, I get the sweats, I get nervous, even though the prep work's been done, the research has been done, or even if I'm going to a new client or I'm doing something I've done 100 times, there's just something about it that like the stomach gets the jitters, the whole 9 yards. But then you get over it, and then you can, you know, when you stop thinking about it, you just do it. But to your point, I think that does say something of you're in it, you're in the moment, and it's a good thing. I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's good that you get that because it helps you push through as well. Because you're like, I got to do this here and now. Is there anything you feel you didn't get to do over these 10 years?
I really wanted to cook for Joe Rogan. And I made serious attempts. But no, I mean, I far surpassed anything I ever set out to do. So, I mean, I'm so lucky, you know, I'm so lucky. I really wanted to see this get more into the mainstream. Little by little, culinary was accepting this. And it's not why I'm not fully giving up on this. I'm starting, you know, a new venture, something new, but the Nomad Cook is there. And, you know, thankfully with the power of AI, we can keep education pumping out without me having to spend hours on hours every day trying to create, you know, social media posts and stuff that, you know, I'm not a graphic designer. I'm not a techie person. So to have that ability, to really push this forward is you know, what I really want to kind of see this, where this go and that.
Yeah. What do you want these last few events to feel like? Is there something specific you're trying to give people? Is it going to be what people expect or you just pushing it and giving it a little bit more because you know that
last summer we did 91 dinners, 91 services over 9 weeks in 32 cities or something. It just, and that got to, we just got to get through this. And I think our events really suffered. And that's really when I started to say, you know what, I need to step back from this because I think the quality is starting to suffer because when I got to America, I felt those who take days off fall behind in this country. So I'm here. I have my opportunity. Put your head down and go. And I didn't take days off. We didn't go on holidays. If we went somewhere, I was going to do a pop-up because I'd make a couple extra bucks, get my name out there. So these last 10 weeks are... I got an amazing piece of advice at the very beginning, and it's something I've always tried to remind myself. It was listening to armchair expert Dax Shepard say he wished at the start of his acting career realized that although he wanted an Oscar and to get to work with all his favorite actors and Vince Vaughn and all, he wanted the movies to be super successful, the real reward is the journey. It's making the sauce. When you're 65 sitting on the porch looking back, you might have some accolades on your mantle, but you're going to be telling stories of, remember the time we messed that dessert up and we had to come up with something new, or remember the time we did a dinner on a ferry in the middle of a lake in summer. Like, you know, I think it's sometimes just slow down. I've got 20 more cities to visit. There's some really exciting things along the way, but let's just stay in today right now because these 10 weeks are going to fly by. So enjoy every day. When I put that post out there, there was only a couple more cities I was going to, and the response I got was so heartwarming of people being like, please come back one more time. So the cities I'm going to, they were picked because of my returning clients and guests, people that have meant something to me, because I've had people who showed up in every single, like in Columbus, Ohio, we've one of our more busier stops, I think close to 20 pop-up dinners we've done there over the last 3.5 years. One of my guests that comes, her name is America Schaefer. she's got to be my favorite guest I've ever had. She's someone I may never have given a second to talk to, but because she was sitting at the table, I got to know her, and I absolutely love her. I think she's just such a special person. So when I was like, all right, we're going to do one more in Columbus, and then, you know, I've got some people in Austin that, yeah, we have to go see them. So the cities that I'm coming to, it's not because I want to come back to that city one more time. It's I want to come back and see some guests one more time, you know?
It's always about the people.
It is so about the people, you know? It to me, you know, we had a group in Chicago. They came to a dinner all as strangers, and then they came back to every time as that group. They became a foodie group that did the cannabis dinner together. The very, very first dinner, we had a group that I said to my team, we need to engage this because they don't have nothing to talk about. You know, it was four 21-year-old raver kids, a really wealthy, quiet Asian couple, another couple in their mid-40s. We had a widower who was about 65 that came by herself. And I was like, to my team, engage them. Give them stories. Do not let silence own the room. They did not need us. They were telling stories. And at the end of the dinner, they're like, should we all go out for a drink? And they did. And that was the moment right there where I'm like, this is not a fad. There is something here. There's something beautiful here. And, you know, that group was the encouragement to keep going. So to wrap this all up and say, I'm doing this farewell tour because I want to come and see you know, my past guests and clients one more time. That's really what it's all about. So it's for me, these last 10 weeks, I'm horrible at recording for social media, and I'm going to try and do a little self-made documentary and make the effort to film a lot more of not just the dinner, but what goes on from traveling to the airports to packing up to planning the menus out ahead of time and give people insight.
The process. People want to see the process. And like you said, what you're going to be documenting is the journey. That's what people want to see. Like you said, that's great, the end result and the beautiful food. But when it comes down to it, they're gonna remember. Yeah. People are going to look at those posts and be like, this is everything he went through to provide us with what he did. Or if you never made it to one of your, you know, dinners, oh, this is what it took for him to actually execute on these.
We always say the dinners are the easiest part. It's everything ahead of time. It's the selling of tickets. That is my least favorite part. I hate it. I'm getting right now about 500 DMs a day that I have to personally answer because I can't post these publicly. So I will not miss that part, but I want people to kind of see the insight. You know, it's funny. I have chefs that reach out to me and are like, oh, I wish I could tour. And I look at them and I go, man, I wish I had a steady one client who paid me every week, or man, I wish I had a brick and mortar to go to every day. I don't really wish that, but you know, the grass always looks greener on the other side. A chef that I met at the very beginning, Chef Derek Fox, who twice competed on MasterChef in the USA. You know, he finally reached out and says, I want to do one of these tours before it's all said and done. So I'm actually sending him up to the Northeast in August. He's going to do his first cannabis dinners. He's going to take one of our past sous chefs with him. And, you know, so we're going to promote a little tour for him, but, you know, I don't want to get in the tour managing business. It's not what I want to do. But if I can inspire chefs to do it, you know, we're hosting culinary cannabis summits that include the ACF course, but also include a 2-hour lecture from myself. We do them in person and on Zoom. And I'm teaching the business side. How do I do the pop-ups? How do I get brands to sponsor and donate products to give away? How do we find Airbnbs where we can host these dinners? You know, what are profit margins like? What are budgets need to be like? You know, what are some mistakes you don't want to do? And what are the safety procedures? You have to be safe. This has been gray. It's not fully legal yet. And knock on wood, I've never gotten serious trouble. And I think it's because we've always promoted safety. I mean, there are dozens and dozens of interviews and podcasts and media pieces that I've done that I'm very open. This is what I do, and this is who I am. But we've always made sure safety is our primary focus. So, you know, that I think allowed us to continue to grow to where we got.
This chapter's coming to a close. You're going to open a new chapter because nothing ever is. The book is not done until you're 6 feet under. You've talked a little bit about education, some of the things you're going to do. Is that really the primary focus, you know, after this last pop-up? Is it focusing on that education piece, or are you still trying to figure out what that's going to be?
No, I figured out what I'm going to do. I'm making a 180-degree turn. I do have to say, 10 years of hospitality and 7 years of cannabis have burnt the candle at both ends. The education side, I think, is so important. It has to keep going. So that is my secondary focus. But I'm going to move into starting an AI company, and I'm going to look at doing automation for small businesses. You know, my background is sales and business development. So I want to start a family. My wife and I would like to have kids, and it's hard to do when you're 20 days on the road. Yeah. And I could stay put and just do dinners locally. But, you know, I think I hit a ceiling in what could be made financially. And the only way to make that much is to tour. And so the cannabis side, we're not going to see a cannabis restaurant anytime in the next 2 to 3 years, nor do I want a brick and mortar. So, I'm going to move into this new sector. I see a window of opportunity. You know, I had a father who made 180-degree turns into different sectors decade after decade and watched him succeed at it. So it gives me the belief I can do it. I was searching for what I was going to do, and then I got this idea, and I'm so excited about it. And that's why last week I was like, I'm going to make this post right now. And, you know, my wife even said to me, I was surprised you did it. And I said, if I did it, I would be popping up in October, November, and December.
Yep.
Because now it's out there. I did not expect the response I got. It was a beautiful thing to see how many people message and say it meant something to them. So that's what led to this farewell tour. And as I said, I'm excited for the next 10 weeks. I don't want to rush it. I want to slowly step through it and soak up every moment that I can.
That's incredible, Chef. Absolutely incredible. And proud of you for knowing yourself enough to pivot, to know that when something isn't there, you mentioned earlier that the passion isn't fully 100% there, that you just know, rather than just grinding it out and doing it and waking up saying, fuck, I got to do this tomorrow, that let me pivot to something that is going to make me happy and going to provide me a life. Because I, just like you, I understand more now getting older what life actually is. I've got two kids and what it's really about and what you want your legacy to be. Chefs come and go. There's obviously the greats that are always remembered, but what do you want from a personal legacy for your own family and for your own life? Yeah. Because we get one shot. Yeah. We get one stab at this. Make the most of it. And as long as you die with no regrets is how I view it, then you've lived a very good life, no matter what you've done in it. So
the quote I gave last week is that life is too short to stay in one lane. You know, my biggest inspiration, other than my father, who is my biggest inspiration, is Anthony Bourdain. Never got to meet him, only watched his shows. But man, he was a chef that really was a writer, you know, and he made that change in his 40s. Because I remember at 31, those couple days being like, do I really start this now? Am I too late? And then I was watching Parts Unknown, and I was like, man, he found that next chapter in his life. So, you know, it's just, as I said, life is short. So, If the passion's not fully there, I mean, I think of some of my favorite athletes. Some of them stayed a little too long, and some of them left what we think was too early, but they left us wanting more. And if I can leave people wanting more, hey, I mean, how many times has Jay-Z come out of retirement? Who knows what happens in 2 years? Maybe I drop a Black album, right? But as of now, I'm like, you know, I want to be looking forward to Thanksgiving dinner, Christmas dinner, these family get-togethers, because that's where the original love for cooking came. And any chef will tell you, like, it's hard to cook for yourself at home when you're cooking for people constantly. Mm-hmm. And so I want to rekindle that love of food that has somewhat been lost. So
I love it. I love it. Where does everyone go if they want to just this final hurrah, catch everything that you're doing?
So check out our Instagram. It's the_nomadcook. I post everything on there. We're not on the other social media platforms. There is a Facebook page, but it's just not getting a lot. I have a website, thenomadcook.com. We'll have everything on the education side, whether it's through what we offer or the ACF. The Instagram page is right now, over these next 10 weeks, we're going to be sharing what the events are, but also I've got a couple series going on, you know, mistakes I've made, things I've done right. We're calling it the Parts Known series, where I want to really acknowledge all the people that supported, came in, were a part of this. The bigger cannabis conferences that happen in Vegas and New York and that, that's where you'll see the education and where you'll see me kind of in the flesh, still out there doing this. But yeah.
Chef Travis, thank you for everything you've done for the industry and what you've brought and bringing to light. I appreciate it as a culinarian, as an educator, and a consumer, a lifelong learner. It's been a pleasure to have this conversation and be able to learn more and talk to you and just seeing you as a person. Well, you can tell it's amazing what you've done. And again, I'm sure there's a lot on the horizon for you. And I will put everything in the show notes. Everyone can check that out, find you, find your events and all of that. And
well, I've got a seat with your name on it in these next 10 weeks. So if we're in a city near you, you let me know.
I gotta look. I mean, I'm in Chicago, but I'm traveling quite a bit. So I gotta.
Hey, I you know what? That's the last city I have yet to announce. I will be coming to Chicago. So you'll be getting an email from me with an invite, because I'd love for you to come and sit down and see what we do.
I would have an absolute blast being on the other side again. I've worked one of these events and knowing the work that goes into it, but to be able to actually get to enjoy it would be a dream.
I didn't do my first cannabis dinner as a guest until year 4 of cooking with cannabis. Wow. So it was, I remember getting to sit down the first time, how excited I was, because my biggest question was, am I going to get the munchies after this dinner? And the answer is yes, you do. So figure out ahead of time, Haagen-Dazs or Ben & Jerry's, because that's a hard decision to make at 10 o'clock at night sometimes.
Yes, absolutely. Love it. So again, we'll put everything in the show notes. And Shep, thank you again. And until next time,
hey, thank you.
We'll catch you on the sunny side.